Support for Extra 106.3 comes from Natural Body Spa and Skin Remedy, celebrating their 35th anniversary and offering gift cards in-store and online. You can discover Mother's Day and anniversary presents online at Natural Body Spa and Skin Remedy at naturalbody.com.
In the South, it's always college football season, and the king of college football reigns supreme all year long. Now more college football talk with the king of college football. It's the Chuck Oliver Show, brought to you by Dr. Pepper and Hooters. Your home to watch all the college game day action with an ice-cold Dr. Pepper.
Chuck Oliver Show rolling on. Heath Klein in for Chuck today as he enjoys a little bit of family time with the Thanksgiving holiday weekend. Nothing wrong with that, but man, we got a lot going on. And of course, one of the things that we're about to have happen is as everybody wraps up the regular season, we're about to start to find out a little bit more about what's going on with the bowl situation. And that's where last night, with what happened there, Ole Miss losing, I think, shakes things up a little bit. If you are somebody who is an SEC fan, what is going to happen next, it gets a little more interesting now. Because before this, realistically, Georgia, there's nothing Georgia could do that would take them out of the college football playoff tier of games. That much is a given. They're in, even if they lost two, which they're not going to, they would still stay at least in the college football playoff tier of games. LSU pretty clearly is in there. Alabama, barring a loss today, also pretty clearly in there. So you had three that were kind of locked in to the playoff or the games that the playoff assigns. Tennessee probably is too. We still have to wait and see how they do this week without Hooker, but it seems like the committee probably will include them. So right now, most people in their projections for the SEC had those four in either the playoff or in power playoff-related bowl games. But then what was next was pretty simple. Ole Miss in Orlando. Ole Miss was going to have nine wins with a win, and then that would be enough for them to be the selection from Orlando. Remember, the way the bowl structure is done, after the playoffs assign their teams, then Orlando is the one bowl that the SEC allows to choose who goes there. So it was going to be Ole Miss. Nine-win Ole Miss, as long as they took care of their business last night, they would go to Orlando, and then you could sort of put together the other possibilities that the SEC assigns itself. The only things you know for sure are that the SEC does try now to avoid sending people to the same bowl too often. So if they just sent you somewhere, they'll try not to send you again. They do ask the people with the bowls who they'd like, but they don't guarantee them what they're going to get. But now because of Ole Miss losing last night, now you've got a situation where Mike Leach's guys, they've got 8 wins. Do they get a chance to go to the bowl? And if they do get a chance to go to the bowl, then that changes some of what people thought would happen where, well, maybe a Mississippi State goes. Now who wants an Ole Miss that lost their last game? Even if Lane Kiffin is still there, does Ole Miss become maybe a little bit of damaged goods? People perceive them as the fans aren't going to be as enthusiastic about coming and following Ole Miss to a bowl game. Where are they on the pecking order of some bowls that may not have even had them in their sights in the first place because they thought they were going to Orlando? And here's another one. Talk about off the radar, but if South Carolina was to beat Clemson, I'm not saying they will, but if they were, they would be an 8-win team. All of a sudden, you could have an 8-win team with a presumably hot quarterback in Spencer Rattler based on the last game, and you would assume he had a pretty good game if somehow they beat Clemson. And all of a sudden, South Carolina could jump from a team that was projected by some people not even to make a bowl halfway through the season, and then yeah, still being put in places like Birmingham and Memphis even a couple of weeks ago, South Carolina could suddenly be in Orlando just as quickly if they were able to win this game this weekend. But you just look at it. You look at this group of teams. It's going to be hard to figure out what to do with some of these programs. I mean, if Florida loses to an FSU, how excited is anybody about a 6-6 Florida in their bowl game? Does a Tampa or a Jacksonville say we'll take them just to have the easy home crowd game? Do you do that? It feels like the Gator Bowl in particular has done that a decent number of times. You know, over and over, Kentucky, the Music City Bowl, has always been really partial to Kentucky. If they were to beat Louisville, yeah, maybe they're a tier above that, but I don't know. Otherwise, they might be back in the Music City Bowl again. What do you do if somebody pulls an upset that you don't expect. Yeah, if you do get a Vanderbilt or an Auburn somehow with six wins, nobody's been thinking about those teams for a bowl at all. Missouri, people have probably thought about a little bit, but again, they've got to beat Arkansas just to get into the mix. It is just a really chaotic time right now. Normally, it feels like there's a little bit less of a gap. You've got the very best, and then you've got a whole mess of teams. It looks like they're going to be right around six wins, and I don't know who's going to decide out of these different bowls which ones excite them a little bit more. I just hope you get some fun spots and some interesting matchups. Again, some programs I have a better idea. You know, South Carolina, for example, I know for a fact that the Gator Bowl has been interested in South Carolina a lot of different years, and it's just never quite worked out. They haven't had a chance to go down there in a while. That's a convenient trip for their fans. If South Carolina's not in Orlando, my guess would be they're probably in Jacksonville. But having said that, again, you know, this year, heck, you've got a new bowl that nobody's even talking about, I don't think, in SEC country, because I don't know if people realize it's a thing. The Las Vegas Bowl. Now, normally you'd say, Las Vegas Bowl? Holy cow, man, sign me up. Sounds good. Let's go. Play in an NFL stadium, spend a couple of days in Vegas? I'm there for that. Nobody wants to go to the Las Vegas Bowl. Why does no one want to go to the Las Vegas Bowl? No one wants to go to the Las Vegas Bowl because the Las Vegas Bowl is on December 17th. And that means if you're a coach and you get assigned to the Las Vegas Bowl, you're going to basically get maybe three or four practices on your campus, maybe, and then a bowl week. And then that's it. Whereas all your rivals that have those bowl games after Christmas, they're going to have time. They're going to actually be able to work with their guys, and they're going to be able to try and evaluate some of those young players. So as a destination for you, the fan, the only bad thing about it would be quickly having to get yourself a ticket to Las Vegas, because you're only going to have about 2 weeks notice. Airfares are pretty expensive this year. So in that sense, it's not ideal trying to get across the country in a hurry. But as a destination, if you could choose Memphis or Jacksonville or Las Vegas, you know, most people would probably say Las Vegas is more of the vacation destination for them. But in this case, if you're a coach, no. The last thing you want is the Las Vegas Bowl, because one, less practice time. Two, high-profile national game against a Pac-12 team on December 17th. If you aren't ready for that game, then it's going to get a lot more attention than if you're just kind of part of the wash. All those different games all at one time right around New Year's Eve, that one won't stand out that much. Las Vegas Bowl, you're going to need to be sharp. You're going to need to play really, really well in that game. If you don't, then, like I say, you're going to have to wear it in front of national TV, because ESPN, that's like their reward for their guys. They've made that bowl game, like, you'll get like Herb Street and Fowler and those guys on that game. You'll get the big boys on that game because it's a reward for all the travel and everything they've done all season. They get a chance to go out there and enjoy Vegas for a couple of days and call a game. For them, great. For you, maybe not so much if you're going against a Washington team looking to prove a point or something like that. So, again, just chaos has been unleashed. And if you think you know where your team was going, if you had begun to kind of make tentative plans, again, you might want to not lock yourself in on anything, because it does seem like the bowl picture is still very, very unstable. And we haven't even gotten to the first upset or two coming out of rivalry weekend. All right, coming up on the other side, we're going to talk a little bit about what went down last night with the Egg Bowl, because last night in the Egg Bowl, you obviously had Mike Leach and Mississippi State break through, get that win that we just talked about, shaking things up. What's next for them, and heck, what's next for Ole Miss? Again, as Lane says after the game, he's sticking around. Are we sure he really, 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 really means it? And we'll talk about it coming up here on the Chuck Oliver Show.
The king of college football, no matter where you go, with a new Southern Sports Today app. Catch the best college football conversation in the South everywhere with the SST live stream and daily podcast. Download it now at the App Store and the Google Play Store. Now more of the best college football talk in the country. It's the Chuck Oliver Show.
Chuck Chuck Oliver Show rolling on. Heath Klein in for Chuck today. And last night, of course, it was a Mississippi State 24-22 winners over Ole Miss. Ole Miss goes for the two-point conversion after two timeouts, does not get it. A very cringy way for things to end there. And just driving home how weird the week was with regards to Ole Miss and their side of things. After the game, the inside receivers coach for Mississippi State, Drew Hollingshead, goes online on Twitter at 12:12 in the morning and says, John Sokoloff, where do you want your game ball sent to? Sokoloff is the reporter who on Monday for WCBI television decided to go with a report claiming that Lane Kiffin was going to leave and take the Auburn job, that he would resign today and that he would be the next coach at Auburn. Last night, Lane Kiffin, in his postgame press conference, appeared to indicate that he's going to be at Ole Miss. You know, people are going to parse words and look at details, but it certainly seems like, at least right now, Kiffin is staying at Ole Miss. We'll see if that proves to be true or not. But the fact that, at least publicly, you've got a member of the other coaching staff strongly implying publicly that he feels like the disruption caused by that report helped. Yikes, that's a cringy place to be. Right now, it is time for today's truest reporter. That is Brian Haydad. He is the co-host of Sports Talk Mississippi on Super Talk Mississippi. You can find him on Twitter at Brian Haydad, and he joins us now here on the Chuck Oliver Show. Brian, how are you, man?
What's going on, man? Hope you had a happy Thanksgiving.
I did, and I hope you did as well. Of course, you were probably pretty busy with yours because the Egg Bowl was going on last night. That tweet there that I mentioned from Drew Hollingshead, what do you make of that? Do you feel like that was a significant factor in how things turned out last night, the distraction caused by that report on Monday?
I would hope not. I would hope that a college football program paying its head coach $7.5 million a year wasn't so thrown off by a report from a tweet from a reporter that they would end up losing a football game. I think that was a pretty poor look from Kiffin. To go after a member of the media like that, who is just reporting something that he feels pretty good about his sourcing on, obviously. And I just felt like, Kiffin was kind of out of line there. And as far as what Hollingshead had to say, I think, obviously he would probably have a relationship with John covering him on the beat here and just having a little fun with him. But for Kiffin, I thought going after John in the post game was out of line.
Well, I guess we'll see. Again, the proof's in the pudding on what Kiffin does here in the coming days. And we'll see how that one plays out. It was an interesting saga for sure here over the last few days. Brian, last night, the fact that Leach wins that game, Leach's track record in the Apple Cup wasn't great, and obviously he had not won yet in the Egg Bowl. How important is that to him and the fans and just the long-term status there? You have to find a way to win a game like this. How big a deal is it that he got it done last night?
It's huge. It gives him a lot of breathing room, because you can now point to it and say, look, State's gotten better each year he's been here. They've gone from 4 wins to 7 wins to 8 with the possibility for 9 in the bowl game this year. But, winning the Egg Bowl is important in Mississippi. It's important to Mississippi State fans. And 0-3 in the Egg Bowl wasn't going to have anybody on Mike Leach's side. It wasn't going to generate any excitement for season ticket sales in 2023. Now, with that win, Leach has some breathing room. He can just step back, and I think almost everybody outside of, I'm sure there's some diehard crazies out there who just don't like throwing the ball 50 times a game. But for the most part, Mississippi State fans are going to be behind Mike Leach coming off of last night's win.
And you would think they should be. Honestly, did you expect that game to play out the way that it did? It kind of turned into a grinder there for a while, and then eventually Mississippi State makes the plays to break it open. But it seemed with those two coaches and with the weather really not being as bad as people thought it would be until the second half, kind of surprising, at least from afar, that it took that long for either team to get to double digits there.
Heath, I don't know that I've ever seen an Egg Bowl go off script more than this one. Ole Miss not being able to run the ball was one of the most surprising things this college football season that I've seen. They rushed for nearly 500 yards a week ago against Arkansas, and Zach Arnett's defense held them to under 100, to under 80. They had 74 yards rushing in the game. Of course, State, the turnovers really hurt them because they were really bad turnovers. Will Rogers, the interception he threw was awful. And then, of course, the fumble there when you're going into the end zone trying to put the game away, that was a bad one there. So It did not play out anywhere near the way that I thought it would, but maybe that's the way for Mississippi State to win, is to win in an unexpected fashion, because you know Mike Leach is kind of an unexpected fashion kind of coach.
Yeah, first time Ole Miss hadn't gotten 100 yards rushing in a game since October of 21 against Alabama, so certainly not what you would have expected there. And you mentioned with Leach, I mean, this stat is just kind of wild. It's their seventh win that they've had over an AP-ranked opponent under Leach when they have been unranked. No other school has got more than four wins as an unranked team against ranked opponents in that same time frame. Why has he been so good at winning these kind of games and yet obviously hasn't been able to take that and become like a 9 or 10 win team? How's he been able to win these kind of games so often?
It's such an odd situation, right? Because the Mike Leach experience, you win one you shouldn't, you lose one you shouldn't. State, I think you can definitely say at this point, State shouldn't have lost to Kentucky in that game in Lexington. We've sort of learned that Kentucky is not a great football team. And then they win this one, a game that, you know, they were an underdog in Vegas. Not a huge underdog, but they were definitely not favored to win. I think Mike Leach is the epitome of the coach who takes things one game at a time and doesn't, you know, look too far ahead. You know, he's worried about what's in front of him at that time. So if a team is ranked at that time, you know, he's got all his focus on that team. The problem is sometimes that he has, you know, his focus on the team and it's just not working for him. And, you know, you get sort of caught in his ways sometimes. I thought the rain was the MVP. You mentioned it a second ago. I thought the rain might have been the MVP for State because it forced them to run the football, and they did so very effectively, and that kind of opened everything else up for them. So I wish I could explain the Mike Leach phenomenon to you because, you know, it would probably make a good book to write. But it's just part of the mystique of Mike Leach, I guess.
Brian Haydad with us from Sports Talk Mississippi, and taking a look after last night at where things stand with the Bulldogs moving forward. Zach Arnett, there's been rumors basically every year since he's been there, Brian, that somebody's going to come in and get him out of there. After a showing like last night, I would think that would continue to happen. How have they held on to him, and can they keep holding on to him?
I think it's a two-step thing there. That one, obviously they pay him very well. He's one of the top paid coordinators in the country. But I think more importantly is he has total freedom on defense. Mike Leach has no interest in calling defense. He has no interest in that side of the ball whatsoever. Zach Arnett's just left alone. He's allowed to do whatever he wants defensively, make the calls as he wants, recruits the players that he wants, and he doesn't have to worry about anybody telling him what to do. I think that's incredibly important to Zach Arnett. He wants to run his defense the way he wants to run his defense. I think Arnett would be a good head coach. I could see him at the Group of Five level very soon. But as far as, you know, plucking him off the staff to be a defensive coordinator somewhere else, someone's going to have to come up with a huge number for him, because I think the amount of freedom that he is granted by Mike Leach is something that's very, very important.
Coming into this year, there were a lot of people who said that the schedule was going to make it pretty much impossible for Mississippi State to have a great year. I think 8 wins with this schedule, I think most people would have signed up for before the season with what the expectations were. You look at next year, and it's a little different. Yeah, you've got your best non-conference game would be Arizona coming in there. You've got Bama coming to you. You got LSU coming to you. You know, road trip, maybe A&M or Auburn could be tough, but obviously right now that's kind of an open question as to exactly what they are. There's not a road trip right now that immediately you just say, well, that's the loss. So yeah. Looking at that schedule, how much can this team try to achieve in 23? I realize we don't know who they get out of the portal, what they do with the recruiting class, but just looking at what they've got, especially if a Rodgers sticks around as a fourth-year guy in Leach's system, on paper, that could set up for a really big year.
Yeah, one thing I always talk about on my podcast and on the radio show is, you know, in a five-year cycle for State, you should have one year where you really trend upward. You have a veteran quarterback, the schedule plays out right, and you have a chance to have a 9 or 10 regular season win campaign. That's next year for Mississippi State. 8 home games. You mentioned the 4 road games. I would tell you right now that State's, you know, I mean, State won all three of those games this year against Auburn, Arkansas, and A&M. And obviously, you know, switching out South Carolina for Georgia is a huge deal for Mississippi State. They have a legit chance to win 9 and possibly 10. Right now, if you look at that schedule, the only one you would say they're for sure underdogs in are LSU and Alabama. And even the LSU series has been very competitive over the past decade since State won down there in 2014. They've been able to play the Tigers a lot closer and had a good game against them this year. Just got away from them in the fourth quarter. So, yeah, next year should be the year where Mississippi State moves forward and has a special kind of season, 9, possibly 10 wins.
Last couple of minutes here with Brian Haydad, taking a look at Mississippi State after last night. Is there any thought that Rodgers wouldn't stick around? Is he a guy that may have a reason to look at the NFL?
I don't think so. I mean, when you watch him play, I think he's a good college quarterback, but he's not especially mobile. He doesn't have an especially big arm or anything like that. He just works within Mike Leach's system really, really well. I mean, if you want to call somebody a system quarterback, I don't feel like that's an insult. If they run the system well, that's what Will Rogers does. So, yeah, I fully expect Will Rogers to be behind center when we start the 2023 season here in Starkville.
Last thing, the bowl game, we don't know who they're going to play yet. Last year didn't really go very well in the bowl. Leach has had a history sometimes of not being heavily invested in the bowl, it appears, based on his team's performance. Just what would that mean? What do they need to do with a postseason game? After this win, can anything change how fans feel about this team?
I think it would be a bit of a letdown to lose the bowl game. You have a chance, and if you finish 9-4, you're probably going to finish the season ranked in the top 15. You have a lot of momentum at that point, especially with Ole Miss looking like they're in a little bit of flux right now. I don't know what's going to happen with Kiffin this weekend, if he's going to go, if he's going to stay. But I think the bowl game is important for Mississippi State. And you're right, Leach's bowl record has not been great. They were embarrassed last year in the Liberty Bowl. So I think, you know, if he takes it seriously, he's certainly got a talented enough team to win against just about any non-SEC opponent out there.
Yeah, it's the weirdest thing because he's obviously a really good coach, and you would normally think give him weeks to prepare and look out, and for whatever reason, it just has not played out that way through the years. Brian, fun game for you guys last night, I know. I appreciate you making some time for us today here on the Chuck Oliver Show.
Appreciate it, man. Have a great day, Heath.
There you go. Brian Haydad. You can check him out on Twitter. Brian Haydad, that's H-A-D-A-D is the handle if you want to check him out. And then, of course, afternoons on Sports Talk Mississippi. And everybody waiting to see what's going to happen there with the whole Kiffin and Auburn saga here in the next few days. He says he's staying based on last night. At least that's how it seemed like he was phrasing it at the press conference. But will Auburn have somebody named by the end of the weekend? And if it's not him, who would it be? Maybe Hugh Freeze, maybe somebody else. Going to be one of the interesting things to keep an eye on for sure. Coming up, we take a look at one of the other huge games this weekend. So Ohio State and Michigan coming up here on the Chuck Oliver Show.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
Support for Extra 106.3 comes from Natural Body Spa and Skin Remedy, celebrating their 35th anniversary and offering gift cards in-store and online. You can discover Mother's Day and anniversary presents online at Natural Body Spa and Skin Remedy at naturalbody.com.
Always college football time in the South. Now back to more of the king of college football, Chuck Oliver, on Southern Sports Today.
Chuck Oliver Show. Heath Klein in for Chuck today, hanging out here on a Friday of Thanksgiving weekend. We hope you had a great Thanksgiving and that you can enjoy the rest of the weekend, but we appreciate you spending a little time with us here today talking some CFB as well. We anticipate checking in up in Columbus here in just one second. I will say this, as somebody who has spent my entire life somewhere in the Southeast and who fully appreciates what SEC football is, it is natural for people here to be skeptical about Big Ten football, whether it be about their ability to compete with the SEC, whether it be about their environments and everything else. I will tell you that 20 years ago, I was at the game that they will play tomorrow, Ohio State and Michigan in Columbus. It was the 2002 edition of the game that Ohio State would win and go on to play for and beat Miami in winning the national title. And it's the one time I've gotten to be at this game. And I had picked a really good year to get to go. It was a fantastic scene after the game. The Ohio State fans stormed the field. They were trying to tear down the goalposts and everything else. It was a wild environment for sure in Columbus, there is speculation that they might try to tear him down tomorrow if, in fact, they are able to have the day that they want, if they're able to get back in the win column against the Wolverines. We're going to head up there now, check in with Tim Hall from 97.1 The Fan in Columbus. He joins us now here on the Chuck Oliver Show. Tim, how are you?
Heath, we're doing good, man. Well, I don't know how I'm doing. It's a little bit nervous. It's a little anxious. We're trying to get through a Thanksgiving holiday, and, you know, with the switch of this tradition about, you know, 15 years ago or whenever that was, we don't get much time to roll off Thanksgiving before you have a heart-pounding matchup. And let's be honest, Heath, this is one of the biggest games, I think, in Ohio State football history coming up tomorrow.
Yeah, there's a lot on the line with this one, not just because of the possibilities of the playoff. Because, look, the reality is that either team could still make the playoff if they lose this game. And yeah, Big Ten championship is nice, but both these programs have bigger aspirations than just Big Ten championship this year. So you look at it and you say, if they were to lose this, if Harbaugh, after looking 2 years ago like maybe he was cooked as Michigan's coach, pulls off back-to-back wins against Day, that would be a really important reflection of what's going on with this rivalry.
I mean, I've been one to be on the side, Heath. I mean, we do an Ohio State themed show, so naturally, like, you live here in Columbus for 10 years. Every piece of work that you do for Ohio State becomes part of your life. And, you know, our radio station is called The Fan. I mean, for God's sake. So we're kind of hard to not be fans and on this side of the fence about it. So I don't pull any punches in that regard. And, you know, the other aspect too, all the stuff you said about Jim Harbaugh and winning that game last year and people thinking that brings the rivalry back, that makes it such a big deal. I never really thought, being here in Columbus, that it was ever gone, because even with this 20-year golden era of Buckeye football, where a lot of outsiders might say, oh, you know, that's not a game we need to pay attention to, Ohio State has still been chipping away at trailing in this rivalry. They still, you know, they got it to 7 before last year. They still need to get these guys 8 more times just before they pull even with it. And to a lot of people, that matters. I know some might say, oh, you're talking about the early 1900s and the leather helmet or the no helmet era back then. It all goes in to the 118-year history of this great matchup. And beating that team up north like a drum for 20 straight years, that is something that it's really just become a lifestyle here in Columbus. So, you know, it gives you some nerves, and you knew it was going to come around eventually, right? You're not just going to beat those guys every single year for the rest of your lives. It was going to come back. Jim Harbaugh finally stepped up to the plate, had his team ready, had his team more dominant last year, and got the job done. And I'll give them credit for that, because you did just sort of walk into this game assuming Ohio State was going to win with a maybe 5 or 10% of that. Oh, well, it's the rivalry. Throw some of the records out. It's probably going to be closer than we imagine. Now I go in to tomorrow thinking that it's just a 50-50 shot for Ohio State to win the game. So that's where we are.
Tim Hall with us here on the Chuck Oliver Show, looking at Ohio State and Michigan. Tim, you know, last year, it's not just that Michigan won the game. It was how Michigan won the game. To be blunt, Ohio State looked like they got physically beaten up by the Wolverines. They looked like a team that just didn't want to be there for 60 minutes. And that, I think that was really disconcerting for some people. It's one thing to lose a game. It's another to look like you got physically whipped. So how do they respond to that? It's not going to be as icy as it was last year, but how do they respond to what they looked like last year and answering the bell differently this year?
Yeah. No, Heath, you're 1,000,000% correct. Anybody who watched that game last year knows that. I think it was Josh Gattis coming out of the game. There were comments, I think, in the radio show about being soft, and, you know, take it and own it, because you were a soft team. Jim Harbaugh was asked about that this week. A lot of the Columbus media went up to the midweek press conference, and he said, oh, that wasn't coming from me, you know, and Harbaugh was very complimentary, even though he had the dig to Ryan Day after the game about some people were born on third base and assume they hit a triple. It's like, okay, dude, I mean, you took over Michigan football. Your dad was a coach, right? You had a lot of inroads too, but whatever. You cannot answer that question about the physicality and the lack of toughness in last year's game until you go out and do it tomorrow. I mean, there is no way to have that answer here before the game. These players could say, and, you know, I listened to pretty much, you know, I listened to six different Ohio State football players, you know, with microphones in front of their faces just 2 days ago about what you just said. You cannot answer that in the middle of this week. You can answer that after 60 minutes of football on Saturday, how you respond, because it was maybe the more, forget about just what the score of the game was. It was how it looked. It was how physically dominant Michigan's defensive line was. Both sides of the ball in the trenches, Michigan beat you up. They were running that ball 7, 8, 9, 10 yards every single carry in the second half last year. It was embarrassing in every way for Ohio State. So Jim Knowles came in and hopefully, you know, toughened up this defense, but none of what happened in the first 11 games means anything if you aren't stopping the run and then running the football tomorrow.
Last couple of weeks, look, the Northwestern game was really weird, understood, you know, wet conditions, windy conditions. Still, I think a lot of people were kind of taken aback that they took as long as they did to eventually pull away and win that game. Last week against Maryland, again, you're not able to put away a Terps team that's far from special. How much of that is, okay, maybe they're looking past them? How much of it is a genuine concern?
It's a little bit of both, I'll be honest. I mean, I think it's funny that Michigan looked like they were going to go down to Illinois, and Buckeye fans are watching that game with plenty of jokes about it, right? Plenty of jokes on social media about how that game went. And then you find yourself in the exact same position on the road at Maryland. And, yeah, I mean, Ohio State's done a marvelous job, Heath, at coming away with some of these double-digit point victories, and Buckeye fans will use that to their advantage. But, I mean, come on. Like, that Northwestern game you mentioned, that was dicey. I mean, way, way dicier than it ever needed to be. I don't care what you say about the weather. Same thing in the Maryland game. So I don't know which is the heavier side of it. You know, were they overlooking Maryland to get to the game, or are there some concerns? Because there definitely are some. And that's what I'm curious about tomorrow, is if Ohio State just decides to push a couple of buttons and become more physical and become more dominant and say to themselves, okay, well, this is what we played all year for. This is championship season. We kind of knew that we were better than all these 11 opponents that were first up on the schedule. But now it starts with Michigan. And starting tomorrow, every single game is a championship season. So it just sort of brings forth a different kind of attitude that they have to bring to the table. And I assume, barring, you know, last year being a setback, that they bring that kind of attitude and that kind of effort that they need to be a championship football team. But they've had issues with their running backs, Heath. I mean, these guys have been banged up. They've had issues just, you know, play calling. I'll put Ryan Day on it a little bit, going to, you know, bubble screen city for a lot of the second half of the season, when you should just be going north up the field to Marvin Harrison Jr. and Emeka Egbuka and these guys. So it's a little bit of both, and I'm curious to see how it shakes out. I want to say, I am not overly confident that Ohio State wins the game tomorrow. I mean, I think I'm going to come down with maybe a one-point win for the Buckeyes and just hope that that's going to be good enough.
You mentioned the running back situation again. You've had different players get hurt along the way, although, you know, a guy like Hayden steps in and still looks pretty good, so it feels like they've got plenty of talent at the spot. But where do they stand at tailback right now?
You know, we don't know, because, you know, the way injuries roll in college football, right? We're looking on Michigan's side and what's going to be the deal with Blake Corum and Donovan Edwards. That obviously matters in this game. You know, Ryan Day had a line when three running backs were grouped together in a question, and that was Travion Henderson, Mayan Williams, the two big guys, and Chip Traynham, who's really a non-factor, who's a converted linebacker, but we thought we might see him just because everybody being banged up. And he basically gave a generic, oh, we're looking forward to getting a couple of those guys back, you know? But, I mean, Travion has been back, and Mayan Williams has been back, and it just feels like it's a matter of, you know, three or four series before one of those guys gets nicked or bumped again and is heading to the sideline. And then Travion's there in a walking boot, or Mayan Williams' knee is being tended to. You just don't know. I mean, you know that, you know, these guys are going to take whatever kind of legal shot they can take and bandage whatever you can bandage. And if you can walk, if your limbs are still attached, you're going to go out there and give everything you got. But you mentioned Hayden. I mean, I think there's a lot of people here in Columbus, and Ryan Day keeps talking about ball security almost every time the kid's name is mentioned, and we haven't seen anything close to him fumbling a football in a game, so it makes you wonder what's going on in practice. But, boy, the guy has looked good, and if it's going to be him, you've got an opportunity for a classic Ohio State story with somebody being indoctrinated into the rivalry, maybe kind of like Chris Olave was years back.
Last couple of minutes here with Tim Hall, again, looking at Ohio State and what's going on with this game with Michigan. Jackson Smith and Jigba has been out almost the entire season. Do we have any clue when we will see him play football again? Is he playing this week? Do we have any idea?
I would be shocked if Jackson Smith and Jigba plays against Michigan this week. I mean, it's sad, but, you know, since he came back, the game is blanking on me now, excuse me, Heath, but, you know, they brought him back for the Toledo game, ran him, you know, for maybe 19, 20 snaps, didn't get the ball thrown his way a lot. Some people were maybe a little concerned that was too soon, and especially if it's against Toledo, what do you need him for? Keep the rest and recovery going, maybe, you know, 3 more weeks, hit the bye week, and he could go. And then he came back for one of those Big Ten games, and he came up limping again, and everybody said on Ohio State's side of the fence that, oh, he was fine. You know, we got him to the snap count that we wanted to get him to. And that was just, I believe it was a bunch of BS because we haven't seen him since. And last time Day talked about this, he did not sound confident. I think he basically used the words hoping and praying that we see him again this season. I'd be shocked if we saw him tomorrow. And I'm just hoping, like he said, he was hoping, once you get to this gap in December before the college football playoff, if they're going to make it, then possibly hamstrings healed enough where he could go for that. And I think he wants to. That's the nice thing about him, is he hasn't just bolted and announced that he's focusing on the NFL draft yet. He's still part of the team.
Last thing for you, Tim. Honest opinion, and obviously we can't know a couple of other factors here. We don't know, for example, does an LSU surprise a Georgia in the title game and clinch a spot they couldn't get otherwise? But for the sake of conversation, let's assume Ohio State is on the wrong side of this game on Saturday. If they didn't get destroyed, if it's a competitive game, do you think they still make the playoff?
I got to say no. It's like you said, sitting here right now on November 25th, I got to say no, just because it doesn't happen a lot. And the Big Ten hasn't really been afforded these luxuries before. With the way that LSU is in the picture, they've got a great shot to get themselves in. TCU's got a great shot to get themselves in. They stay undefeated. I mean, I kind of agree with it. That should be enough. I know it's a combination for a lot of people with, oh, are you really the better team? And then are you really the better team versus deserving to go by being unbeaten in a Power 5 conference and winning a conference championship? USC also with one loss, and they could win the Pac-12. So I guess I got to side with no, Heath. Chaos can't happen. I mean, that's what's fun about this, is you can't actually make a case that it could happen, but I'd have to say back into a corner, no.
The one thing is, at least they feel like with that Notre Dame win, they've got a better case in Michigan. If Michigan loses this game,
they do.
With the trash non-conference schedule they played, it's really hard to see, unless they get a lot of help, them getting into this. I think Ohio State is at least
correct.
More of a conversation point. Tim Hall,
They're sitting at 2. Yeah, they're sitting at 2 and Michigan at 3. So you're right about that, man.
Yeah, Tim Hall, you can hear him in Columbus, 97.1 The Fan. They do a great job up there on all things Buckeyes. And, again, you can check him out on The Buckeye Show as part of things there at 97.1 The Fan weeknights at 6. Tim, appreciate you making time for us today. Enjoy the game, man.
Yeah, you too. Enjoy it. Thanks a lot, guys.
There you go. There's the lowdown from Columbus. Again, that's going to be a blast. On David Holloway behind the board, very, very intrigued in the game. Dave, you want to crack the mic for a second here? Go ahead. Call your shot. What's going to happen here, Dave?
Buckeyes by a zillion, baby!
There you go. Like I say, there's a lot of games that do not live up to the Southern standard when it comes to rivalries, intensity. I was at Michigan State in 1997. The night before they played, I'm in East Lansing. You wouldn't have even known there was a game the next day. It's not always the same when they have their rivalries up there and what we've got down here. This is one that, for real, legitimately lives up to the hype. If you ever get a chance to go, I strongly encourage you to check it out. Although I would also encourage you to check it out in Ohio rather than in Michigan, because the crowd at Michigan games is nowhere near as intense as the one at Ohio, and I've been to multiple games at both. The Ohio fans are a lot closer to SEC fans than the ones at Michigan, but this one this weekend should be a doozy. We will come back. Some final thoughts here on the Chuck Oliver Show.
to the Chuck Oliver Show on Southern Sports Today.
Chuck Oliver Show, Heath Klein in for Chuck for a few more minutes here on a Friday. By the next time that you get together with King, we'll know everything that happened from the weekend, who wound up winning their rivalry game, what's the buzz on some of these coaching moves. One thing about it is, if you look around right now, there's already been most of the moves it feels like are going to be made. Like, there's not a single job in the ACC or the SEC, I think, right now, that people are kind of tapping their foot, waiting to see whether or not there's going to be a firing. It feels like, you know, maybe somebody makes a move on their own. There's always a chance, for example, that maybe a retirement happens or something like that, or obviously someone could go to another job. But it doesn't feel like you're going to be tapping your foot for head coaching moves. On the other hand, you could have some staff moves and have staff moves fairly quickly, because now with the way things are, with the transfer portal opening up in a week and with everything that comes with early signing period, if you are going to make any kind of changes on your staff, you need to make them pretty quickly. So there's going to be a whole bunch for you to track next week here on the Chuck Oliver Show, and they'll have you covered with all of it. I did want to mention a couple of things here quickly. One is Jahleel Billingsley has quietly, apparently now, lost his status with the Texas program. It's not 100% clear based on reports exactly what happened, but the former Alabama tight end is no longer with the program. You're talking about somebody who had to sit out the first six games because of suspension and then had 38 yards receiving on six catches in limited action with the program this year. And again, it's not clear why or how, but Billingsley is apparently no longer a part of things at Texas. And it's just a reminder, it's always great to get some guy out of the transfer market that is somebody who's supposed to have great physical ability and all the status that comes with being a highly touted recruit. But when a guy like that is told, hit the bricks, there's probably a pretty good reason. And I can't say I'm in any way surprised that it turned out poorly for him. When you're talking about somebody with the ability he had and yet didn't work at Alabama, I can't say I'm shocked it didn't work at Texas. And yet, you'll see it in the next week. There will be, once the transfer portal opens up, there will be people doing their own version of that, trying to grab somebody and hope that you can bring the potential out of them that some other school was not able to do. And the number of times it works versus the number of times it doesn't feel like it's worth the effort. I also just wanted to say one thing quickly as we head towards coaching season here. We'll see what the final verdict turns out to be on the Lane Kiffin saga. Again, Kiffin said last night when he was asked, did he intend to be the Ole Miss coach next season? He says, yes, he does. Until the Auburn job is filled, then there's a chance that maybe he's not being forthright there. There's always a chance that some other job has his eye. If you remember, Lincoln Riley emphatically made clear he was not going to be the next LSU coach. No one bothered to ask him as a follow-up, well, how about Southern Cal? Any chance you're going there? Nobody bothered to ask that. And what do you know? The next day, suddenly he was gone. So we'll see what the final verdict turns out to be with regards to Lane Kiffin and the claim by John Sokoloff of WCBI-TV that he was going to be going to Auburn. But I will just say this to you. In general, I would recommend, as a fan, don't drive yourself crazy with reports from local TV people about coaching searches. Because overall, in my experience, the number of times that people in local TV get these things right versus the number of times that somebody goes on bad information, somebody goes on thinking they've got a good source, but they don't realize that the good source has gotten information that is not good information. The number of times that gets screwed up versus the number of times they get it right is really, really small. And I would just encourage you, just give yourself that mental break. Don't put a lot of stock in what you hear from anybody in local TV. And I say that as somebody whose wife worked in local TV for more than 15 years. It's nothing against local TV people. This is just not a story historically that they cover very well. One time, I swear to you it's true, I had somebody tell me Steve Spurrier was going to Auburn. They reported from a Montgomery TV station based on something that the news director's husband had heard at the gym. For real. You might not remember Spurrier's tenure with Auburn. It was a very brief tenure, as it turned out. That is all we've got for today. Big thanks to David Holloway. Thanks to all our guests. Thanks to the folks here at the Chuck Oliver Show for letting me hang out with you here on a Friday afternoon. Enjoy all the games. It's rivalry week. We don't get that many of them left. Make sure you have a good time with them. We'll see you down the line here on the Chuck Oliver Show.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
Support for Extra 106.3 comes from Natural Body Spa and Skin Remedy, celebrating their 35th anniversary and offering gift cards in-store and online. You can discover Mother's Day and anniversary presents online at Natural Body Spa and Skin Remedy at naturalbody.com.
The Fan is ready for Brave season. Are you?
3-1 smoked high in the air, deep center field, and heading for the horizon. A home run by Olsen.
We're streaming every game of the Braves 2024 season free on the 680 The Fan app.
So make sure you download it now and don't miss a pitch of the Braves this season.